Let the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Well, this morning I'd like to reflect on the gospel text with you all. This text is well known, this aphorism, render unto Caesar's what is Caesar's, God what is God's, is well known among Christians and even in our culture broadly, in literature and popular culture. This pops up from time to time. But what does it actually mean? And for those of us who want to be obedient to Jesus, how do we actually do it? And so I'd like to look at this text in a little more detail. Now, Matthew 22 is set during Holy Week. Matthew 21 starts with the triumphal entry, and immediately after the triumphal entry, Jesus comes into Jerusalem. He's riding on a donkey, which seems strange until you realize that this is a fulfillment of a prophecy about the Messiah coming into Jerusalem on a donkey. And the people are shouting at him, and they're calling him the Son of David, which is a title for the king. And the first thing that Jesus does when he gets into Jerusalem is goes to the temple, and he demonstrates against the temple by turning over the tables, casting out the money changers. The temple was not just the place that the first century Jews went to worship, but it was also the center of their cultural and their social life. This was a primary symbol of what it meant to be a Jew in the first century was the temple. And so for Jesus to come and demonstrate against the temple like that was incredibly provocative. They were in town for Passover. There were a lot of pilgrims from all over the diaspora who were there. And the Romans were on edge. They knew that these Jewish folks sometimes got a little out of hand. They were a little rebellious. Sometimes they needed to be put down. So the Roman authorities were on edge. And when a man comes into town, hailed as the Messiah, when this man goes and demonstrates against the primary symbol of their cultural and spiritual identity, something is going on. Something is happening, and there's a lot of tension in Jerusalem already that week. And so Jesus is teaching at the temple, and as he's teaching, his opponents are coming to him, and they're trying to discredit him in the eyes of the people. And today we see a perfect example of his opponents trying to discredit him in the eyes of the people. So we have the Pharisees who have been opponents of Jesus throughout his ministry. And we also have the Herodians. Now, who are these people? So you know that the Pharisees were a group of people that theologically they shared the same basic paradigm that Jesus shared. They believed in angels. They believed in demons. They believed in the afterlife. But the emphasis of the Pharisees was on keeping their particular interpretation of the law. And Jesus, in the stream of the prophets of Israel, called the Pharisees to account on that. He was very clear with them that it was great that they cared so much about tithing, and it was great that they cared so much about prayer. But they were neglecting, according to Jesus, the weightier matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faith. And so they were constantly in opposition to one another. The Herodians, on the other side of the coin, were connected to King Herod. Now, King Herod, according to one scholar, was Caesar's lackey in Jerusalem. He was Jewish by birth, but he was made by Caesar essentially a puppet governor to enforce Caesar's agenda. And of course, with that came a lot of perks, nice houses, plenty of money, good food, a lot of influence. And so the Herodians were very different than the Pharisees. The Pharisees were these ultra-pious people who wanted to follow every jot and tittle of the law. The Herodians, on the other hand, were incredibly pragmatic and were looking out for their own peace and their own comfort and their own security. But what they had in common was that the status quo was working for them. And the thought of the Romans coming in and crushing the people of Jerusalem was not appealing at all to them. because in their own ways, they were both benefiting from the status quo. And so the Pharisees, again, they were focused on these sorts of tiny observances of the law, and importantly, things that the Roman government would not care about. Do you think Caesar cares how much the Pharisees tithed? No. Do you think the Romans cared about how often and in what manner the Pharisees prayed? No. Do you think the Romans cared about whether or not the Pharisees were in contact with people who had touched dead bodies? Answer, no, they didn't care. So Jesus comes and says, you're neglecting the weightier matters of the law, which include justice and mercy. And the Pharisees say, whoa, wait. That might cross the Romans if I started talking about justice. The Romans might get upset if I started talking about mercy. We've created this little space to do our religious stuff. And look, I don't like the Romans any more than anybody else does, but we can do our thing with the Romans here. And so don't tell me about justice. Don't tell me about mercy. We're just doing our thing. The Herodians, on the other hand, would have been very threatened by any instability in Jerusalem because they benefited from the status quo. They were friends of Caesar. They were Caesar's friends. And so if the Romans felt it necessary to come in and take out all the Jews in Jerusalem, they would have been hurt by that. Their influence, their prestige, their wealth, and their position in society would have totally gone away. So what the Herodians and Pharisees had in common is that they benefited from the status quo, and therefore they were opposed to Jesus because he was talking like a revolutionary. Jesus, to quote Tracy Chapman, was talking about a revolution here in Jerusalem over Passover. And so they were trying to ask him questions to discredit him in the eyes of the people. And this one about paying taxes to Caesar was an easy one. Now, to be clear, this is not a blanket statement about paying taxes. So if you're hoping that there's something in this text that would get you out of paying taxes, you're not going to find it. Sorry. This is a specific tax. It's called the head tax. And this was a tax that every subject of the Roman Empire paid every year. It wasn't even that much money, but it was a symbol of the occupation. It was a symbol of oppression. And the Pharisees hated the tax, but they paid it. They benefited from the status quo. It was okay for them because they could do their religious stuff in the status quo. The Herodians didn't care about paying the tax because they got more than that from Caesar. So it was a good investment for them to pay the tax because they were getting a lot as a result. But who didn't pay the tax was the revolutionaries, the zealots, who believed that if you paid this tax, you were a collaborator of Rome. And the zealots were incredibly passionate about overthrowing Rome, removing the Romans from the Holy Land, and so they were always looking for ways to do that. And so when Jesus comes in, riding on the donkey, and he demonstrates against the temple, and people are calling him the Son of David, they thought, aha, here's our guy, here's our moment, it's time for revolution. But what the Pharisees and the Herodians knew is that if Jesus said, yeah, go ahead and pay the tax, then they could go to the zealots and say, hey, Jesus isn't your guy after all. You know, he pays the tax. And so then the revolutionary fervor would subside. They would make it through another Passover, maintaining the status quo. But if he said, no, don't pay the tax, don't pay it, they could go to the Roman authorities and say, hey, here's this rabble-rouser. We need to put him in jail. He's going to cause a bunch of problems. And so Jesus knows what they're up to, and he calls them on what they're up to. Now, I'll just say that when those of us who ask questions to people and are looking for a straight answer and we don't get one, it's frustrating, right? But this is exactly what Jesus does. So if the Pharisees and the Herodians, if they were posting on Twitter or put it up on their blog, hey, Jesus evasive again, that kind of thing, right? But the amazing thing is that they walk away not frustrated, but they were amazed by Jesus' answer. So what about this answer is so amazing? What is it about this answer that's so amazing, that leaves them amazed? And he says, render to Caesar's, that's the way the old King James translated it. And that's important, actually, because that Greek word used there, apodidomi, does have the sense of to pay back a debt. render or give back to Caesar. And in our text today, it's translated emperor. So render to Caesar or give back to the emperor Caesar's things, and then give to God the things that are God's. But it's important, again, to remember that the first thing Jesus did was ask for a copy of the coin. Hey, do you guys have a coin? I don't carry these things around with me. So I'm wondering if you all have one. Oh, you do? Well, gosh, the Pharisees have a few. That's really interesting because you're so focused on keeping the law. And I wonder if you look at this coin, what do you see on this coin? Oh, that's right, somebody's image. Huh. Now, you guys know the second commandment, right? I mean, I know you're really focused on tithing everything and you're really focused on not touching anything that's been contacted with dead people. But do you remember the second commandment? What is that? Oh, don't make for yourself an image of anything. Okay. All right. Well, I'm glad that you have one anyway, because I don't carry those around with me. So whose image is this? Oh, it's Caesar's. Okay, great. And what is this? Whose inscription is this? Oh, it's Caesar's too. Now, what did the inscription say? It said, Tiberius Caesar, son of divine Augustus, Pontifex Maximus. So, Caesar, son of God, high priest. And Jesus says, this thing right here, this coin, belongs to Caesar. His image is on it. His inscription is on it. This is Caesar's stuff. Give it back to him. Why not give Caesar's stuff back to him? This is his image, his inscription. He's the son of God. He's the high priest. Give it back to him. It's his stuff. But, Jesus says, give to God the things that are God's. And this would make them wonder about whose image. Where do we find God's image? And for those of us who read Genesis chapter 1, which all of the Pharisees and maybe even the Herodians would have been familiar with, God made humankind in his image. Male and female, he made them. So, Jesus says, give to God the things that are God's. And what are the things that are God's? The things that are God's are each and every one of us. We bear God's image. And so we are called to give ourselves to God. And what Jesus is doing here so brilliantly is limiting Caesar's scope of authority. Now remember, in the Roman Empire, Caesar was God. Caesar was divine. Caesar could do anything. But Jesus is saying, no. Caesar has his stuff. Go ahead and give it back to him. But God has his stuff. And his stuff is you. You do not belong to Caesar. You belong to God. And so the question, whether or not Jesus is starting a revolution, is not answered clearly by Jesus. And Tim Keller gave a great sermon on this text, and he talked about Jesus being the revolutionary who revolutionizes revolutions. Because Jesus is being revolutionary here. He is talking about something radical here. That we would give to Caesar this coinage because it's his, but that we would give to God everything about ourselves because we're his, because we're God's. But the way that Jesus becomes a revolutionary is not marching on Jerusalem with swords, but it's rather, and this is the key, by giving himself to us. Well, Jesus calls us to give ourselves to God, everything about us. But Jesus shows us what that looks like because he's about to go to the cross where he gives himself to us. He gives his whole self to us. He gives his whole life to us so that we can know forgiveness, that we can know reconciliation with God, that we can know wholeness and abundance in the life that he calls us to live. And that's not a life lived as a subject of Caesar, but that's a life lived as an image bearer of the Creator God, who gave himself for us, and we give ourselves to him. And so when we think about this text and giving back to Caesar what's Caesar's and giving to God what's God's, the call here is clear that yes, Caesar has stuff. We can give Caesar stuff back to him. But the most important thing to understand is that God has stuff too. And it's not only me who bears the image of God, but it's also you who bear the image of God. And it's also my neighbor who bears the image of God. And it's also my coworker that bears the image of God. And it's even, according to Jesus, our enemies that bear the image of God. And Jesus gave himself for all of these image bearers and calls us as image bearers to give ourselves to him. Amen.